Welcome to the Women and Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. Esther is a respected leader in the field of personal financial advice with over 25 years of experience. After going through her own significant and challenging life-changing events, she overcame fear and self-doubt to launch her own successful advisory firm. Now Esther is ready to share her practical and personal experiences to help other women clear their hurdles and brave life's transitions. In this way, she inspires women to lead fulfilling and confident lives.
Hello and welcome to Women and Wealth with Esther Szabo from Gates Pass Advisors. I'm so excited Esther is allowing me to introduce the guest today, and that is Jay Moreland. Jay founded the Behavioral Finance Network and speaks around the globe on the topic of investor behavior. This is how he and Esther met. He has published several articles in industry journals and is the author of The Emotional Investor, How Biases Influence Your Investment Decisions and What You Can Do About It. He is passionate about progress that comes from learning from others and our own mistakes. His mission is to help others understand why we make those mistakes, learn correct perceptions so we can improve our future decisions. Esther, Jay sounds fantastic. Thank you so much for bringing him on the show.
Jay is fantastic. Thank you, Eric. And it's good to talk to you too. Jay, good afternoon. How are you today?
Hey, Esther. Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
Well, I can't see you. Can you see me? That's scary.
I cannot. I'm envisioning you though right now.
Okay.
Don't worry. It's your best side that I'm envisioning. So.
Okay, good. So Jay, you know, in your introduction, it talks a lot about mistakes. And can you talk a little bit about investor behavior and how it relates to mistakes?
Yeah, and I actually, I pretty much have a PhD in mistakes, I think. I have made a lot of mistakes, both financial mistakes and you can talk to my wife, you know, mistakes in life. And as frustrating as mistakes are, they truly are a path to progression. We don't progress if we're not making mistakes, but mistakes can bury us. So I think first off that the key is to acknowledge that we don't have to get down on ourselves for mistakes. They happen. We're not perfect, but it's more about what do we do about those mistakes? Do we seek to hide them because our ego is more sensitive? And that does happen quite a bit. We all have sensitive egos. Or are we like, okay, I need to change this. I want to change this. I want to get better. And actually seek to find out what drove that mistake. You know, where did I get caught up in it? And then putting up perhaps the proper defenses to make sure that if that situation comes up again, we can respond more favorably and not get, and you know, basically not repeat the mistakes, which is the big challenge with investing really in investors is not making mistakes. It's making the same mistake repeatedly, meaning not learning from the mistake.
Mm-hmm. And what types of mistakes have you encountered that people do make over and over again?
Well, why don't you just be more direct and say, what mistakes have you made that we can learn from?
All right. All right, Jay.
Because everything I'm going to talk about is me. Because as I was researching this, doing a thesis at the University of Minnesota on investors, that's really what I was doing. I came across this by complete accident, the concept of psychological biases and how they play into us. And I'm like, oh my gosh, as I was studying, I'm like, I have every single one of these. This is awful. But, you know, a couple of the more common ones, especially ones that we're seeing right now, there's one called the availability bias, which is really about how our opinions are influenced by information that's most available to us. So if you think about how polarized we are these days, whether it's mm-hmm. political or in any sense, what we tend to do is we tend to focus just on those things that we want to hear. So now we have another bias at play called the confirmation bias, which is that we really don't want to be told that we're wrong. We want to have our opinions and beliefs confirmed. So what happens is over time is we seek out information that confirms our existing beliefs and what we want to happen, and we ignore anything that's contrary. So guess what information becomes available to us all the time? it's the same thing. So it's that reinforced behavior. And then that leads to another bias of overconfidence, because it's like, oh my goodness, how could I be wrong with this? This is, I mean, I'm doing all my research and all my research says this. And all of these things are subconscious. So it's all happening below the levels of our ability to actually recognize that this is what we're doing. But so it's not just one thing, it's one thing begets another, which begets another. So behavior is complicated. And all of a sudden, we're coming forward with a very confident decision of saying, I'm going to do this. And I am almost certain this is going to play out.
So is it kind of like if you come through, let's say, 2020, the beginning of 2020, when there is a pandemic, there is riots and issues, the pandemic shuts down things globally, and you see like, oh my goodness, it's all, you know, we have an upcoming election, there's this polarization, and it can be, you know, I don't think I should be invested right now. And everywhere you see reasons that validate that. Is it that type of approach or thought process?
Well, yeah, but 2020 was that on steroids right there, right? Because I think any investor in their right mind was thinking that. It didn't have to go too far. And of course, you know, many investors, as demonstrated by the markets going down in last March, and bailed. And those are times where we just sometimes have to hold on tight and realize that we're in this for the long term, that we don't know what the next couple of months or even year are going to look like, but we have a plan and we're going to stick to our plan. We were fortunate in 2020 that, you know, it was the, you know, the downturn was short-lived. But yeah, I mean, and you take it to the present time right now where people are talking about, oh my gosh, this pandemic's going to become endemic. And has the market gotten ahead of itself and all the money printing that's out there? The bottom line is every single year, there is something. There is some reason as to why the markets will go down, and there's reasons why the market will go up. And that's the challenge with the availability bias, the confirmation bias, and all of these is that there's never one clear answer. And so if we're not aware of this stuff, we will simply be listening to that information of one-sided, and then that can cause us to make significant and very costly investment decisions, which typically have to do with abandoning the plan.
So getting back to your mistakes, Jay, what are things that you've done? Have you abandoned your plan at some point or seen only a certain amount of information?
Yeah,
you asked me to bring it to you.
Yeah, I mean, hey, I wrote the book and I'm passionate about this because I know, here's the thing, Esther, it not just influenced me, it still influences me. So like, even though I know about all of these biases and how they influence us, and it doesn't mean that I somehow don't feel them anymore. I feel them. But the thing is, now I have the proper defenses put up. But without those defenses, I would be just as likely to fall into it than not. So an example of something that I would do would be just the myopia bias, the you know, just being very short-sighted, being very influenced by short-term outcomes in the market. That's also influenced by the outcome bias, where what the market does over a given week or month or maybe quarter influences my investment decisions going forward. And another thing is I used to tinker with my investments all the time, thinking that it gave me, when you tinker with the investments, it gives you the illusion of control. And right. And so I would do that thinking, oh, I have new information, I have more information now, so I'm going to do this. And, you know, I significantly underperformed when there was no reason to do it. So here I was more stressed, but I felt like I was doing the right thing because I was reading, I was watching, I thought I was researching. But the reality is, you know, no matter how much you research something that is unpredictable in nature, it's not necessarily going to help you make better financial decisions, because the market is only rational over longer periods of time. The shorter the time period, the more unpredictable and the more volatile it is. And so, you know, because we tend to be influenced by short-term outcomes, especially if we like to watch the market. And that was another thing. I thought that it was wise. I thought it behooves an investor that wants to be in the know, that wants to be intelligent, well, I should be knowing what's going on. But without the knowledge of how the media headlines and how the market movements were influencing my thoughts and my emotions, I didn't realize how it was causing me to make such poor investment decisions. I knew I was, but I was constantly trying to make better ones without knowing what the issue was at first. So I repeated those errors.
Those are great examples, Jay, because that feeling of, okay, if I do my research, if I read the Wall Street Journal and I, you know, perhaps look on Reddit and I get all this information, then I'm going to be ahead of the game. I'm going to have insight that other people don't have and I will be able to decide. And that's such a powerful feeling, isn't it? I mean, I just really want to emphasize the word feeling that, okay, I've got this.
And absolutely. You think that you're doing the right thing as an investor. You think you're being an intelligent investor, but the challenge or the problem is that it's all of this stuff is just noise that has sometimes a shelf life of just a couple of days. You know, the prediction from the Wall Street expert, the news headline today, that all could go down the drain tomorrow. That's the challenge that we have, is that we're trying to make good long-term decisions based upon information and outcomes that are very uncertain, and they're not persistent either.
No, just like what happened in 2020 with that huge downdraft in February, then to the bottom in March, and then that quick recovery. I mean, talk about speed of change. Very hard to make decisions based on being in the middle of that about where things were going to go. But so many people do try, because talk a little bit, if you would, about what gets triggered in us, this whole feeling of safety, what's going to make us safe. Isn't that a big driver of trying to make the right decisions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the core functions of us as humans is survival, right? It's stay alive. Mm-hmm. In our brain, we have something called the amygdala. And the amygdala, some people have called it our fear center. Its primary function is that whenever we detect a dangerous situation, it activates and basically sends responses throughout the entire body that says, get to safety. So think of the fight or flight response. This is really the flight response. And what's really interesting is that neuroscientists have found through functional MRI, that's imaging of the brain, that when people are experiencing a financial loss, their amygdala is activated. So it's not like we're talking a mortal loss. So it's not like a car is about to hit us or a building's on fire. But that same thing that says, get to safety, get out of here, that same thing activates when we're faced with financial losses. So it doesn't matter what's triggering it. The message is the same. Get to safety. And if we don't get to safety, to the amygdala's desire, it can make us sick to our stomach. It can make us lose sleep at night. Like, it will make sure it gets what it wants. So there is a driver, because when the market is going down, you're losing money. How do you get to safety? You sell, right? That's exactly what you do. So we are fighting. This is what's so hard, is we are fighting against a physiological response. And you know, when I'm presenting to individuals and I'm talking about this, sometimes I'll make a little joke and I'll say, you know, there is one thing you can do about it, and that is remove the brain, right? But that, you know, if you remove the brain, I think you're gonna die. So the bottom line is, we have to simply understand this is the nature of what things are. And some people, I found some people have more sensitive amygdalas than other people do. Mm. And so part of it's understanding what our sensitivity is. And part of it is simply making sure that we stay away from it. So if individuals, and I hear this a lot from financial advisors, they'll talk about their clients, you know, investors that say, I'm just not comfortable with the amount of volatility that's out there. And it's like, but the markets have always been volatile. That's an inherent nature of it. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes the best response is simply stop looking, stop watching. It's kind of like if I said to you, Esther, hey, I'm really uncomfortable. I don't like the feeling of punching myself in the face. I don't like the pain afterwards. you know, you'd probably say, you know, Jay, maybe you ought to stop doing it, right? It's the same thing. Like if we don't like the way something is and it's an inherent part, it's almost like an eternal or universal law, rather than hope it weren't the case or try to, we just have to put up the correct defense. So for investors that want to participate in the long-term gains of the market, but they recognize that their amygdala is sensitive, don't beat yourself up about it. It's physiological, no big deal. Recognize it and then put up the proper defense. Stop looking, stop watching. And actually, stop watching is perhaps the greatest advice for an investor's long-term returns. There's actually been studies done by both Vanguard and Fidelity that have found that. Are you aware of those studies?
I'm aware of some other studies that they've done in terms of benefits. I'll come back to that.
Okay. So, I mean, they were looking at accounts and like, wow, there's this section of accounts that have done really, really well performance-wise. What are these investors doing that the other ones aren't? And they found these investors had two commonalities in them. One, they had been dead for years and nobody had claimed the money. And the other one was they totally forgot that they had that account, meaning maybe it was like an old small 401k. But the bottom line is they didn't mess with it. They totally forgot about it. And so it's kind of funny that truly, as crazy as it sounds, like don't look, trust your plan, trust your strategy, generally is not only is it tends to be the most profitable strategy, but it also tends to be the strategy that helps people actually live the best, because now they're not worried about all the ups and downs. They're simply not paying attention. And instead, they're paying attention to things that they can control, such as relationships and their work and other things in life that bring them perhaps joy and satisfaction.
And satisfaction. Yeah, the study, I want to shift gears a little bit, but it fits with all of this, which is the Vanguard study. And this is going to sound, you know, self-serving, but the Vanguard study that talks about those who utilize the services of a financial planner, investment advisor, and I want to come back to this term investment advisor in a second, outperform. And I want to talk with you and get your thoughts on this tide that I often feel like I'm fighting against with prospective clients, sometimes existing clients, that the whole use of an investment or a financial advisor is to make sure your investments are running properly. And I think that's definitely a key part, but a lot of the value that we bring is making sure that there is a good plan in place and that people are staying connected with the plan, or as life continues to evolve and change, as it will, that their plan can evolve and change. And thus, it's not, like you say, tinkering with the investments all the time to make things work out all right. And so I'd love your perspective on those, because in the industry, there are certainly, in my opinion, investment and financial advisors who are worth the money. And frankly, I think many of them that are not. And what would you say is the benefit of having and hiring an advisor?
Yeah, so I think you're talking, just so I know that we're talking about the same thing, you're talking about the Advisors Alpha study from Vanguard.
Yes, correct? That's correct.
Okay, all right. And which basically says that the number one value in an advisor is what they call behavioral coaching, which is really about helping investors make better decisions. I 100% agree with that. You mentioned that there's many good advisors and some, I'm going to say, because I go throughout the nation, I talk to advisors all the time at different conferences. I actually think the majority of advisors do not earn their pay with their, with their clients. So I can understand how there's this drive to go to, you know, your self-service brokerage firms and say, I can do it myself, you know, because for all intents and purposes, putting together an asset allocation, even a financial plan, you know, there's so much software out there now that somebody can do that and be okay with it. And Vanguard recognizes that, look, there's value behind that. But to me, the real value of an advisor is helping the investor stay with the plan. The easiest thing, or one of the easiest things, is to identify your goals, to figure out where you're at right now, especially with all the planning software that's out there, and then figuring out what's a good allocation. But then it's all about staying in the plan, because day one, first of all, your portfolio will always underperform something. There's always the better looking person out there, and you know, to say, right? And there will be times when the strategy underperforms. There's a lot of investors right now that are disappointed with their performance because they're comparing it to, say, the FANG stocks or, you know, the S&P 500 or the Russell Growth Index, which has done phenomenal, whereas the more value-centric stocks have done horrible. And it's like, oh my gosh, this is awful. Let's bail on this. And so, but no matter what, there are always temptations to get out of something and to go into something else. And we see that the studies show that investors do that all the time. So even if we're not talking about going from, say, cash to stocks and bonds, stocks to cash or bonds, you might be going from a diversified portfolio that really fits you to all of a sudden overweighting in, say, growth or whatever's doing hot at the time. The one thing we know is that we in investors like to chase what just went up. We love doing that. And it feels so good. It's so good. And there's so many biases in play when that happens. But that's where the real value of an advisor, in my opinion, not to discount other things that they do, but just as the greatest value is that is helping the client stay disciplined and patient to the plan. Especially in these days where everything's about instant gratification, instant success, real investing is about compounding wealth over time. And that whole concept of overtime is really difficult for us to do, especially when we're seeing that there's constant quick riches being made out there. And we want that because we envision the fact that, oh my gosh, I could reach my goal 4 years earlier, or I could have X amount more. And so I could give more to charity. I could do more of this. And so there's always these good reasons behind it. Generally, it's not a ton of greed that's like, haha, I can't wait. I'm going to go and, you know, waste all of this money. But we take our good intentions, but we extrapolate it outside of the laws of investing. And the laws of investing are that risk and return are greatly correlated. But we don't like that. So we look for every time we can where we can get a high return with low risk. And the only time that that works is when you're in a Ponzi scheme and it hasn't been identified yet, right? That's the only time those things work consistently. But then, you know, the challenge is that you're in a Ponzi scheme. But investors have a really hard time with the risk-reward ratio, because how much we wish, there's so much we hope for. And so I think part of it is just stepping back. And because all of these are innate feelings, these biases that we have are innate, it's really hard to control it. That's the value of an advisor, is for an advisor that gets the psychology of it. So you ask the question about the value of an advisor. If the advisor gets the psychology of thinking and feeling and how that influences investment decisions, and they help their clients with that, immense value. But if it's just an advisor that's going to put together a portfolio allocation and kind of just set it, forget it, and that's about it, which I think, unfortunately, are a lot of the advisors out there, I don't see much value in that unless the fee is extremely low.
Right. And I absolutely agree with that. And the place where I feel like I swim against the tide a lot is that in the public's perception, it's very hard to know the difference. You know, it's all sort of painted with the same brush. I mean, that's okay. That's just, you know, the challenge. What I also appreciate is when clients go, oh, I didn't realize I would get all of this too, because I so strongly believe it is not about asset allocation set and forget unless it links in with a lot of different things. And going back to risk and reward, if we talk about what's going on right now, and we're talking about risk and the riskless assets, if we talk about treasury bonds, et cetera, there is very, very little yield in them. So there's another risk there that there'll be so much money in quote unquote safe assets that a client won't achieve their goals that way either. And that's something that we're seeing is having to raise, looking at it within the context of planning, but continually talking about this issue of risk in ways that no one expected to in their retirement. You know, we all grew up with, well, you're earning money, you're in the stock market, and then when you're retired, you're in the bond market. And right now, it's just the yields are so low, it doesn't make sense to have too much in, you know, an interest-bearing instrument that's after taxes and inflation, you're negative. So how might you address that in terms of risk and reward from that side of things, not just the stock market volatility, but, you know, the inflation rate risk?
I think what's challenging and for a lot of individuals is actually defining what risk to them really is. Because yeah. I think if you ask most investors, what is risk to you? They're looking at the risk being short-term loss, or what we call fluctuation in market value mm-hmm. and portfolio value, right? And so the idea of going to treasuries and these riskless assets, CDs, cash, things like that, is that, okay, good. The market can go ahead and go down 20 or 30% or whatever it is, and I'm going to be okay. But that's a difficult place to be, because I don't believe that that's what risk is, because risk is something that really we ought to fear. And I don't think we need to be fearing fluctuations in the market, because they are inherent to the market. It's a feature of it. And by the way, a side note, we cannot control the amount of fluctuation, volatility in the markets, but we can control how much we feel and how much we recognize. And that's because it's subjective. It is a function of how often we look. So if an investor doesn't like how much fluctuation is out there and they feel like that's their risk, I would just suggest to them, why don't you just stop looking and you won't notice the fluctuations that are out there. I think that the real risk that investors need to look at, I think there's only two risks that really matter out there. Number one is the risk of running out of money, right? Which in mm-hmm. which case you run out of money early, or you have to adjust your lifestyle, which nobody wants to do. And the other risk is permanent loss. I think there's a big difference between a loss that's temporary, which is what we see all the time. For example, March of 2020, markets went down about 35%. That was a temporary loss. The bubble burst in 99 and 2000, that was a temporary loss. Even the financial crisis, as awful as that one, with the markets going down about 50% and lasting a couple of years, as awful as that was, all of those losses were temporary. The only time they became permanent is if the investor chose to sell. And so, but that's again what the amygdala wants us to do. So as far as a risk reward, I think it's just really important that investors define what risk truly is to them.
And I think when I've asked that question, what I always, you know, we have a questionnaire process that we go through with our clients of, one of the things is, you know, what do you want from us? And it has about 19 different statements. And one of them is, you know, keep me aware of the risk. And when I ask what the risk is, everyone has always said, you know, fear of losing money. And mm-hmm. I think it's challenging to think of how one loses their money due to inflation, even though inflation is tiny, but when interest rates are tinier, that's a really hard thing for the mind to get itself around. Whereas stock market declines are much more vivid, whereas the other is more of a slow drip.
Yep. And that's a huge challenge, right? That's where myopia is playing in, because that idea, you know, being in cash now is fine because nobody's projecting out 20 years and the loss of purchasing power, right? That they're right. going to suffer from it. They're focused exactly. on the nominal, not having to lose nominal dollars today. And so, yeah, I mean, there it is. I mean, again, it comes down to the short-sightedness of our decision-making, where we call ourselves long-term investors, but we oftentimes are tempted and influenced to make long-term decisions, even for money we don't need for 10 or 15 yeah. years, or even if we're retired, maybe we have a good income right now, but still it's like, yeah. I don't want to see my portfolio value go down. And so that would cause them to make those decisions. And that's where I think the advisor really has to balance out, number one, the client's not just financial ability to tolerate risk and fluctuation, but their psychological ability yeah. while still helping them reach their financial goals.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jay, this has been fabulous talking with you. Is there anything else you want to leave us with? It's been, I just feel like we could talk for hours, but we will.
Yeah,
people have probably arrived at their destination.
About this. Yeah, I think that the key thing, as hard as it is, you know, when we take kind of a self-evaluation of mistakes that we have made, I think that that's a really healthy thing to do, but not to beat ourselves up, but to truly figure out, okay, what can I do going forward? It's all about progress. So it's not about that we're bad investors or that we made bad investments. It's that we want to be better investors and we want to make less errors going forward. And that's where I think having an advisor that gets it, that understands the psychology of investing, can be a huge asset to helping investors do it. Could investors do it on their own? Perhaps they can, but it's kind of like dieting, personal training, and other things. Sometimes we just need a little coach and a little accountability along the way, because when we're fighting against our very own physiology, it can be really hard. And so even myself, even I that know this stuff, I've written about it, I speak about it all the time, I'm still subject to it. The only difference is I've improved simply because I've put up the defenses. And part of that defense is that I have somebody I talk to before I make decisions, just to help me, you know, think through it and make sure that I'm not making emotional or knee-jerk reaction choices.
Yep. And I do exactly the same thing, Jay. You know, I know this stuff, but I also know exactly the psychology. I know my own biases based on how I grew up, et cetera. It's so important to have somebody else to run it through who tells me basically what I tell my clients, but it's great to be on the receiving side and go, okay, because I do know this is absolutely at play. So thank you so much, Jay. For those listening, if you want more of Jay, and of course you would, you can check our website. Jay's voice is that voice you hear on our Mind Games videos. They are short videos that Jay actually produces on these topics. They're about a minute, maybe 2 minutes long, that are constantly refreshed on our website, gatespassadvisors.com, Mind Games. And really good ways to access information about these biases. So again, Jay, thank you so much. And when we are all back in conferencing again, I can't wait to see you again. But thank you for your time today.
Sounds good. Thank you, Esther. Good talking to you.
Esther, this is a fantastic podcast. Jay, thank you so much for being on the show. Esther, I'm so glad you brought him on, because Jay and I have a ton in common. First of all, you and I have spoken about it before. I make a ton of mistakes. I make lots of mistakes. But Esther, I don't know if you knew this, I also dislike punching myself in the face. It's just something that I...
Well, why do you keep doing it?
Well, no, I stopped many, many days ago. So
okay. Many minutes ago.
Many days ago. All right. And of course, our last thank you goes to you, the listening audience. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening to the Women in Wealth podcast with Esther Szabo. If you have not subscribed to the podcast yet, please click the subscribe now button below. This way, when Esther comes out with a new podcast, it'll show up directly on your listening device. This makes it much easier to share these podcasts with your friends and family. Again, thanks for listening today. For everyone at Gates Pass Advisors, this is Eric Johnson reminding you to live your best day, every day. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Women and Wealth podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast so you receive notifications of new podcasts as they become available. Check out the website at www.gatespassadvisors.com for more information. This content is developed from sources believed to be providing accurate information. The information in this material is not intended as tax or legal advice. Please consult legal or tax professionals for specific information regarding your individual situation. The opinions expressed and material provided are for general information and should not be considered a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security.